Welcome to the Simple Money, Simple Life podcast. I am Matt Erickson, and I'm your host. This is a podcast where we explore how simplicity beats complexity, especially in money matters. We explore investing, personal finance, and how to live a simple and awesome life. Welcome to episode 13, titled Psychology and Money. This is an exciting topic to discuss. As we are all human beings, we're wired in certain ways. We carry life experiences to our money story. We have our childhoods. Some of us were raised in nice environments, others in tough environments, some with money, some without money. All of us have different psychology and different ways of relating with money. And a lot of the success we have in life and with money depends a lot on our psychology and how we think about money. So in today's episode, we're going to have a lot of fun exploring different concepts that apply psychologically to how we manage our money. And I think that these concepts will really be helpful because most of the time, if we start investing and develop habits to investing, things go pretty smoothly if you can just develop that habit to do that. When we get into trouble is when we start having our own psychology mess with us, and it can cause us to do some really unwise things financially. So we're going to go over some of the most common ones that the researchers have found, and we're going to discuss some ways to avoid them. So the first one we're going to talk a little bit about has to do with investing, and it's called home country bias. So home country bias refers to an investor's tendency to favor companies from their own country over those from other countries or regions. The tendency to invest in our own country or our own backyard is not unusual or surprising. It's a worldwide phenomenon and certainly not unique to U.S. investors. So that is really common for Australian investors, Swiss investors, French investors, Brazilian investors. Most people have a home country bias. They live there. They know their economy. They believe in that where they live. And so many people that live in the United States tend to only invest in United States companies. Now, I think we have a more of a reason to have home country bias in the United States than other countries might have because, we have one of the best economies in the world, some of the brightest minds, some of the best companies. And so I think one having home country bias in the United States and living here and only investing in United States companies probably will be just fine. But it's something to be aware of. I do have home country bias. I know that. I do favor U.S. companies. So in my portfolio, I tend to invest 80 to 85% in the U.S. economy and 15 to 20% in the international economy. If we were to not have home country bias, we would go with what the market cap dictates, which is about 50-50 right now. So 50% international, 50% U.S. Another bias that we might be prone to is called recency bias. Recency bias is a cognitive bias that favors recent events over historic ones. So for example, let me provide a good example of this, of what's going on right now. So over the last 10 years, the U.S. economy and stock market has outpaced the international stock market. The returns have been higher in the U.S. versus the international. So one might come to the conclusion, why in the world would I invest in international companies and stock markets when the U.S. has just dominated them over the last decade? Well, if you look at historic charts, there's also many decades and periods of time where international did better than U.S. And so recency bias means we just look at the recent past and we develop our opinion based on that, saying, oh, another one would be U.S. growth companies like Amazon, Facebook, and Google are the way to go. I'm going to put all of my money in those companies. Yes, that's worked great over the last decade, but there's also been stretches of time where tech was really down, like in 2000 when the tech crash happened. That sector got creamed. So if you only had your money in tech during that time, you would have lost the great majority of your money. If you are well diversified into other asset classes that may have been doing poorly previously, they tend to rebound. These things fluctuate, so it's important to have a well-diversified, balanced portfolio so that you're not just giving into recency bias and investing or doing what's hot right now or has been over the last few years. And really, in investing timeframes, 10 years is really not that long of a time. Another factor I want to talk about is greed and fear. Greed and fear is part of the human condition, and it really comes into play in investing in money. So when, for example, the pandemic started in the spring of this year, 2020, people really started to get fearful, and a lot of people sold their stocks and got out of the market entirely because they were worried that our whole economy was going to crash. This also happened back in the Great Recession of 2008 and the tech crash of 2000. There have been lots of times over the years where people get very fearful and they jump out of the market because they're worried they're going to lose all their money. There's also times when people get very greedy. For example, when a company like Tesla, for example, is doing really well and they dump high percent of their net worth into that, thinking, oh, if I can just get this in, I will make 30, 40% returns. And our fear and our greed can really get the best of us. It's really wise to understand how we respond during those kind of market conditions and develop a plan to hold ourselves accountable so we don't give in to especially selling when the market goes down. That is how most investors lose their money, which is they buy high and sell low, which is the opposite of what we should be doing. So, like for example, a tech stock or a communication stock is doing really well. It's on a great tear. Facebook or Microsoft or Apple, something is really high and doing well. So, okay, I need to buy now because it's doing so well, assuming it's going to keep going up. Well, that doesn't always happen. And then other times we might feel like, oh no, if I don't sell right now, I'm going to lose all my money and it's going to turn to zero. So when the economy was going down during the 2007 to 2009 period, people were selling their stocks like crazy because it really was scary. It was a time when people really thought the economy was crashing. Well, for those who bailed out at that time, they sold low, locked in their losses, and never made that money back. So it's very important to know your emotions and be able to just notice them and ride through them and not necessarily give in to them when that happens. Another thing with psychology and money that I've noticed is many people think they can outsmart the market. The market is very efficient. There's hundreds of thousands of people studying the market every day, and somehow I think I know more than they do. So people will get into day trading. They'll start to trade stocks on a daily basis thinking they can outsmart the market and make money. And I just don't think that is a wise strategy for the great majority of people. Another thing I've seen with some people is to have too much in cash. So my belief is you should stack up a good 6-month emergency fund if you're super conservative, 12-month, 24-month emergency fund, if that's your thing, especially those in retirement. 3 to 6 months is adequate for most people who have a job, especially a stable job. And so some people will, and this is less common, but there's a few people out there who really want to hoard the cash because they're fearful of what might happen. So they might have an emergency fund that's very inflated or large, not something I've ever had, but in because they're fearful and they need to feel secure. And so all that money that's sitting there in cash making less than 1%, some of it could be deployed in the stock market and make on average 10%. So a lot of people lose out on a lot of potential gains and really a different kind of lifestyle in the future because they're too scared of what the stock market might do and they feel like it's gambling. Another thing I see with psychology and money is the concept of I don't want to be bothered with it. So I have a couple of coworkers who are like this. I have one who he was at a different job and he had a 401k there, and I analyzed his 401k and his funds are in really lousy mutual funds that cost 1.5%, which is a really high fee for a mutual fund. So he has his money in that account, and I've recommended to him, hey, why don't you move that 401k and roll it over to a traditional IRA in your Fidelity account and buy some index funds for 0.015%, which is so much cheaper than the 1.5% that he's paying there. But since it will take an hour to do this, probably by calling Fidelity, filling out some paperwork, he just won't be bothered with it. So his money just sits in the account with a high expense ratio, getting hit with fees. Instead of taking a little bit of time, choosing to make that change and moving it over and then never having to worry about it again. So there's also people, something with psychology and money in America, especially I think we feel like we never want to take or accept average. We always want to be our best. We want to beat average. We want to be superior. And investing is one of those few categories where being average, in my opinion, accepting what the market gives you is what we should do. Because if you believe you can get more than the market gives you, you're often going to be in for a great big disappointment. That's why active mutual funds exist, is because people believe that the fund managers that are working the mutual fund can outsmart the market. They can buy stocks that will do better than the index that they're competing against, and they believe they can do this. Over time, actively managed mutual funds outperform typically about 8 to 10% of the time. So the likelihood of being able to pick the right actively managed mutual fund that will outperform the index fund is highly unlikely, statistically not in your favor, even though there's thousands of people basically running into actively managed funds. There's thousands of people investing in them. There's 401k plans that are full of them, even though all the data backs up that they don't really pan out. It's because people make money with actively managed funds, and it's hard to accept the average. People think they can do better than the average. Another piece that I see that of our psychology that can get in our way is the concept, I'll invest when I make more and can afford it. This is one of the most common ones I see, that, oh, I can't afford it right now. I have too many bills. I just can't squeeze it into my budget right now. I believe that most people, I'm not saying all, some people really can't afford to do it, and I'm sympathetic to that and realize that, but most people can afford to at least invest a little bit by tightening and sacrificing in some other areas. So I think this is one of those cognitive biases or thinking errors that we should really confront and take the bull by the horns and make it happen instead of accepting the stance of, oh, I just can't do it. There's no way I can do it. Well, I think most people can do it. Another one I want to touch on is that something to keep in mind in association with all this is research shows that during the course of most years, most of the gains in the stock market are made within just a few days of the year. So if you're dancing in and out of the market, selling your mutual funds, putting it into cash because you're worried a drop is coming, it's very likely that you could miss these few days that really make up most of the gains for the year in the stock market. It's a really fascinating concept. So I believe in buying and holding through thick and thin and dollar cost averaging, which means you just consistently buy into the market with every paycheck you get or every month through a Roth IRA. So some people believe that they can time the market. They can sell when it's the right time and buy when it's the right time. I don't believe in that either. I think it's important just to be a buy and hold investor and put your money in there and just let it go to work for you. A few other biases that I would like to cover in this podcast. One is called anchoring bias, which is a cognitive bias where an individual depends too heavily on an initial piece of information offered to make subsequent judgments during decision making. Once the value of this anchor is set, all future negotiations, arguments, estimates are discussed in relation to the anchor. So we maybe have decided on something and that's the way it's going to be. I have found this to be the case with, I've tried to talk some people into investing on their own. Some people will invest in with a broker that charges really high fees, puts them in actively managed mutual funds, high expense ratios, plus they charge assets under management. So I was talking to someone last night, they're paying over 2% in fees to their broker. And I was teaching them that you can do this on your own with a few simple steps and save that 2%, which could compound to be $1 million over an investing lifetime. Some people will accept that and act on it, and others will be anchored to that kind of set of standards and beliefs that they need to stay with that financial advisor. Another one I want to talk about is sunk cost fallacy. Individuals commit the sunk cost fallacy when they continue a behavior as a result of previously invested resources. This fallacy, which is related to loss aversion and status quo bias, can also be viewed as bias resulting from ongoing commitment. So we put our money into this thing, and therefore we need to stick with it because we invested all of our time, effort, resources into that. Therefore, we're going to keep going with it instead of really honestly, objectively looking at something and deciding if we need to cut bait and move on. One other concept is called superiority bias, which is when people think too much of themselves, basically without good reason. So they've done a lot of studies where people mostly think they're smarter than they actually are. People think they're better looking than they actually are. Think they're better lovers than they actually are. This is superiority bias, and it also happens with investing where people think they're smarter than they really are when it comes to investing. I don't think investing requires necessarily a high IQ. It involves being willing to live on less than we make, setting up a program and an automatic process where the investing happens at a certain time each month, and then we stick with it and control our emotions. That doesn't take a high IQ. That takes self-determination, and it takes being able to sit and be calm when you want to do something different. So we need to be aware of superiority bias. And confirmation bias is another one, which is a tendency for us to search for, interpret, favor, and recall information in a way that confirms or supports one's prior view, beliefs, or values. So people tend to unconsciously select information that supports their views, but ignoring non-supportive information. I had this happen once when I was talking with a gentleman who, in a company I worked for, where he was trying to tell me that the actively managed mutual funds that he was offering in our 401k were so much better than index funds. He was clearly had this confirmation bias going on. I showed him the statistics, the factual information about how index funds outpace actively managed funds, but he still couldn't accept it because he really was dedicated to this belief because it really meant his livelihood. Another one is loss aversion, which is the tendency to prefer avoiding losses to acquiring equivalent gains. So basically what it means is it stings more to lose than it feels good to gain. And that's why some people invest so conservatively, because they're so afraid of losing. And why sometimes young people invest heavy in bonds and cash instead of going to an all-stock portfolio, because of this loss aversion. People do not want to lose what they've made. Another one I want to touch on briefly is called the endowment effect, which is the finding that people are more likely to retain an object they own than acquire that same object when they do not own it. They did an experiment with coffee mugs where they gave people certain parts of the study group coffee mugs and others they wanted to sell. The ones who kept their coffee mugs and they would only sell it for an average of $7. Those who didn't own the coffee mug were willing to buy it for $2. So when we own something, and this happens when we sell our houses, when we sell our cars, all the time we think what we own is worth more than it is. And so this is just an important cognitive bias to be aware of. And the last one I want to talk about is called hindsight bias, also known as the knew-it-all-along phenomenon. is the common tendency for people to perceive past events as having more predictable than they actually were. So in other words, like, oh, I knew all along that that was going to happen, or I knew the market was going to go down. The main focal point, the main thing I want you as a listener and all of us to really understand is that the human mind is complex. We all have different cognitive distortions. We have different biases that are part of our psychology, and none of us are exempt from that. It's really important to know these biases as we invest and manage our money. It's not really practical to believe that we can get rid of these biases or not have them. It's just more important to be aware of them and notice them so they don't negatively impact our investing life and our money. I hope this podcast has been helpful to maybe have you recognize maybe some of your biases or things that might apply to you in your investing career. I want you to be a successful investor. And what it boils down to is investing, living on less than we make, investing the rest. It entails investing in low-cost index funds. It entails coming up with a steady, consistent, automatic plan where we invest every month, either through our 401k and our paycheck, or through a Roth IRA, through a monthly withdrawal from our checking account. They're very simple principles, and once we set them in motion, we just have to do it once, and then we just have to go with it and trust it. That will be all for today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it and learned something. I would ask you to please provide a review on Apple Podcasts if you can, or the place where you listen to podcasts. Every review helps to allow the podcast to get to a broader audience. And my goal is to get to at least 100 reviews. I've got a little ways to go to get that, but a 5-star review would be especially appreciated if you think this show deserves it. I also hope you're all doing well during this difficult time of the pandemic. It's certainly, I know a lot of people are under stress. And I guess that will be all for today. And thank you again for listening. And remember, the simple life is a good life.